This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Former President, U.S. President Donald Trump's acquittal at his second impeachment trial may not be the final word on whether he is to blame for the deadly Capitol riot on January 6th. AP correspondent Ben Thomas explains why.
After voting not guilty Saturday night, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell told the Senate,
"Didn't get away with anything yet,"
suggesting Trump could face legal consequences for inciting last month's insurrection at the Capitol. Democratic Senator Chris Coons tells ABC's This Week,
"I think there's grounds for further proceedings, both civil and criminal."
Trump is now a private citizen stripped of the protection from legal liability that the presidency gave him. The insurrection is just one of the legal cases shadowing him. Trump also faces legal exposure in Georgia over an alleged pressure campaign on state election officials, and in Manhattan over hush money payments and business deals. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Armored vehicles were deployed in major cities in Myanmar, another day of demonstrations. Sunday's deployment by the military is believed to be the first time such vehicle, thought to be a Ukrainian-made armored personal carrier, has been seen in the commercial capital since the military coup 2 weeks ago. It was not immediately clear why the military vehicle was driving on the road around Yangon City Hall in the city center. Hundreds of thousands of protesters took to the streets across the country as new army rulers grappled to contain a strike by government workers that could cripple their ability to run the country. At one point, police did open fire. A civil disobedience movement to protest against the February 1st coup that deposed the civilian government led by Aung San Suu Kyi started with doctors. This is VOA News. Average daily coronavirus cases in the United States have dipped below 100,000 in recent days for the first time in months. But experts cautioned Sunday that infections remain high and precautions to slow the spread must remain in place. And in an interview with ABC's This Week, President Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says schools can be opened if CDC guidelines are followed.
"I think it can be done. I mean, obviously, it's not a perfect situation, but it's really important to get the children back to school in as safe a way as possible. Safe for the children, but also safe for the teachers and the other educators."
The seven-day rolling average of new infections was roughly 250,000 in January. That's according to data kept by Johns Hopkins University. That average dipped below 100,000 on Friday for the first time since November 4th. It stayed below that number, 100,000, on Saturday. New measures to curb the spread of coronavirus in Britain came into effect from Monday, meaning compulsory hotel quarantine for passengers from high-risk areas in Britain. Passengers arriving from countries where coronavirus variants are spreading will have to pay for a 10-day quarantine in designated hotels, while rule breakers will face heavy fines or jail terms. The new travel rules add to restrictions that already ban Britons from traveling abroad for holidays. The government said the stronger measures were needed to prevent new variants of the virus from thwarting Britain's rapid vaccination program. Quarantines in hotels have been used by Australian and New Zealand as a mostly successful strategy to limit the spread of coronavirus. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to speak at a virtual meeting at the world's major economies Friday to discuss the coronavirus pandemic and global vaccination distribution, according to the White House. Biden is expected to talk about the need for a global response to the pandemic and to recommit the U.S. to multilateral engagement, a stark contrast from former President Donald Trump, who developed an isolationist foreign policy that saw the U.S. withdraw from major global agreements and alliances. Since entering office, Biden has reversed many of Trump's policies, including by joining the World Health Organization. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, February 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea confirms a new Ebola outbreak near its border with Liberia.
The government has confirmed that there is some Ebola cases that have been identified in the southeast region of Guinea in the city of Nzérékoré. So far, we have identified 7 cases, and among those 7 cases, 3 are already died.
Liberia goes on high alert to avoid an Ebola repeat of 2014. Somali political leaders are at odds on election schedule. Lesotho's health ministry comments on ongoing health workers' strike and widening division between Kenya's president and his deputy.
Yeah, we are either together or we are apart, but you cannot come and take credit and then at the same time insult those you are together with.
And Africa's oldest leader celebrates 88th birthday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Guinea has confirmed a new Ebola outbreak in the city of Nzérékoré near its border with Liberia. Nzérékoré was the ground zero of the 2014 Ebola outbreak in West Africa that killed more than 11,000 people. Guinea's Information Minister Amara Sampare says 3 people have already died from the 7 confirmed cases.
The government has confirmed today by a statement that there is some Ebola cases that have been identified in the southeast region of Guinea in the city of Nzérékoré. And so far, we have identified 7 cases, all more than 25 years old. And it is 4 men and 3 women. And among those 7 cases, 3 are already died.
So what is the Guinean government doing now about this news?
The government, through the Minister of Health, has organized an emergency meeting today with all the technical partners of Guinea to take a certain number of measures in terms of controlling the spread of the epidemic. So they have decided to isolate all the suspect cases in the Nzérékoré CTP to investigate on the cases to make sure that we don't have any other suspect case. And we need to identify also all the contact people. They have already sent an investigation mission in Nzérékoré, in Gweke, and we have already put in place a kind of a coordination committee with all the technical partners and the World Health Organization.
I'm sure the Guinean government is quite aware about this same region. I think it's Nzérékoré. This is the same area where the 2013 Ebola broke out. What is going on there?
It is difficult to say it right now. As I explained to you, there is a mission, an investigation mission that is already on its way to try to understand what is going on over there. And you're right, the area, the Nzérékoré city, the Nzérékoré region is very near to the Gekedu region, where the last Ebola epidemic took place in Guinea. So let's wait until this mission comes back with conclusions.
The Liberian Ministry of Health, or the Liberian government, President George Weah, has given a mandate to health authorities there to be on heightened alert about the situation in Nzérékoré.
I mean, it's a normal decision from our neighbor because, you know, in Africa, people move all over the border because they have a lot of cultural and social activity together. So it is normal from the Liberian government to urge their medical staff and all the health system in Liberia to be ready in case of any suspect identified person in the Liberian country.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Sampare. It was so nice to talk with you.
Thank you, James.
That was Amara Sampare, Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Liberian President George Weah has told his country's health authorities to increase epi-surveillance and preventive activities in the wake of the reported new Ebola outbreak in Guinea. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Francis Carter says President Weah wants to make sure that Liberia is acting proactively to avoid an epidemic crisis such as the Ebola outbreak of 2014.
James, thank you so much. I think one of the things that have happened is the fact that we are going through COVID and Ebola is not strange to us. So upon hearing the information, the minister alerted the president, informed the president of what was going on. And based on that, the team immediately began to look at all of the system that we have in place. Since there's no case in Liberia, basically the National Public Health Institute is going to look at the surveillance system along the border. And then when we have a case, if we were to have a case, then the ministry response team will come in. But we are dusting up the papers. We are working with the various county health officers along the border, and we are basically putting our surveillance system in place.
Does it mean Liberia is considering closing its borders with Guinea?
Not really, James. The thing here is that the border between Liberia and Guinea is a porous border. So there is no way to say you are shutting down the border. And if we were to do that, it is going to negate the fact that we may have people coming through the bypasses, and it's going to make it difficult for us. So we are going to look at what is happening along the borderline, keep the border open, put our monitoring system in place. When we fought Ebola, it took the community to help us in defeating Ebola. So we're going to put back in place the community structures along the border, and that will help us in making sure that if we were to have anyone that comes in with a sign of symptoms, we can quickly pick up that person, begin contact tracing, and put a necessary system in place. So no, we do not intend to shut down the borders now.
If I remember clearly, this area of Guinea is where it was believed that the 2014 Ebola case might have originated. In case this comes to be very serious, what do you think the lessons that Liberia learned from 2014 that can be applied?
Thank you so much, James. And I think one of the best things that we have done is that based on the experience from 2014, Liberia has always been on the alert. And so even with COVID, we were able to deploy some of the strategies that were used during 2014 that have helped Liberia to maintain our COVID rate in this country. So basically, the fact that we have still some of the experts that dealt with the Ebola cases, the community structure is still in place and everything else is in place. What we are doing now is making sure that we put those systems in place and monitor our border communities. There is an interaction now between, like, for example, the Nimba County area, because this case is from the Jericho. The first case that we had came from the Gekedu area. It's not too far, but it's the same area. So basically, we are doing everything we can to make sure that the borders are safe, surveillance system is increased, and if we were to have any case, definitely Liberia is prepared to make sure that we diagnose that case and begin all of the management that we can put in place to contain a spread in this country.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carter. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much, James, and look forward to talking to you again.
Dr. Francis Carter is Liberia's chief medical officer. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Members of Somalia's opposition group say they will hold a peaceful protest later this week against President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo's government over delayed elections. Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
The coalition of Somalia's opposition presidential candidates announced the protest against the leadership of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. The president, who is known by his nickname Farmajo, has been seeking a second four-year term, but the parliament has ruled out an extension. Farmajo's term ended last week without a clear plan on presidential and parliamentary elections. His government and the state leaders have failed to make a headway on the issue. Speaking during a press briefing in the capital, Mogadishu, the chairman of the opposition presidential candidate, Sheikh Sharif Sheikh Ahmed, said the peaceful demonstration is as a result of the government's failure to conduct elections on a stipulated time. He says the opposition political parties resolved to conduct a peaceful demonstration this Friday against the federal government's failure to conduct transparent polls, improve security and political stability in the Horn of African nation. Former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, who is among those eyeing the top office, called on the international partners, including the United States, to help Somalia towards the realization of peaceful democratic state. Mahmoud says they expect the international community to be part of the solution and not the problem through engaging the leaders who complicate the ongoing impasse among the Somali political stakeholders. As the dispute continues, civil society groups are urging the leaders to avoid actions that escalate already tense political environment. Hassan Modane is the associate director of Horn Institute for Peace and Development.
In dowladu ay ka gaadisay taasna ay keentay in runtii xaaladan isla soo gaaro mu'aarad.
Hassan Modane says it is very clear President Farmaajo's government failed to conduct the polls on time, but it's also responsible on the opposition side to call for a protest amid the surge of COVID-19 cases in the country. He says there is also a risk of increased explosive attacks in the capital, Mogadishu. The international community urged Somali leaders to avoid unilateral actions and proceed quickly to agree on implementing September 2020 electoral deal, which will allow 101 delegates to select members of parliament. They will in turn choose the next head of state. Farmaajo has accused the opposition leaders of backing out of the deal. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, February 15th. The divide between Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto appears to be growing by the day. Last week, President Kenyatta publicly asked his deputy to consider resigning from office instead of criticizing the government from within. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Deputy President Ruto has responded saying he will not resign because he's performing his duties as guaranteed under the Kenyan constitution.
Speaking last week, President Kenyatta accused Deputy President Ruto of absconding his duties and instead focusing on campaigning for the 2022 presidential contest. President Kenyatta also accused Ruto of continually criticizing the government while at the same time highlighting its successful projects in his campaigns. In another rebuke over the weekend, a visibly angered President Kenyatta lashed out at his deputy for criticizing the Building Bridges initiative that seeks to amend the country's constitution. He says, there's no need to incite Kenyans to fight amongst themselves. On one hand, you're saying the government has failed. On the other hand, you're saying we as a government has done this and that development. How many governments are there? There's only one government and you must embrace all the goods and bads. It is either that or you resign and let those willing to do the job continue. He adds,
yeah, we are either together or we are apart, but you cannot come and take credit and then at the same time insult those you are together with.
Deputy President William Ruto over the weekend dismissed President Kenyatta's call for his resignation. He said most of his duties as Deputy President have been reassigned to Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i. However, Ruto says he's not in any competition with President Kenyatta and will continue to respect the President and his decisions.
There is no contest between me and my boss, and I respect the decision of the President. And the president calls the shots. He is in charge, and I have not countermanded any decision. And I will continue to work as Deputy President of the Republic of Kenya because that is my place in the Constitution.
Kenyan political commentator Michael Agwanda explains what he thinks may have caused the row between President Kenyatta and his deputy.
The row between President Uhuru Kenyatta and the Deputy President, Dr. William Somaya Ruto, is now in the public domain. This began as a result of the party wrangles that began as soon as our 2017 election was over. And it has escalated to a point where basically the Deputy President is not attending government functions, and now it is having a lot of negative words coming from the President, and we are seeing the Deputy President taking a very firm ground to respond.
The recent Member of Parliament, Aden Duale, is calling for reconciliation. He says the deteriorating relations between the two and their allies by extension has become a major concern, and he fears the escalation could destabilize the government and threaten the unity of the country ahead of the 2022 polls.
It's very unfortunate. It's very sad if today you as the leaders of this country
are causing a lot of division within our party the last 2 years, until that division is affecting the running of government, the running of our country, the stability of the, of political parties.
President Kenyatta may want his deputy to resign, but analysts say he cannot fire Ruto because the 2010 constitution allows for a joint leadership comprising the president and his deputy, who are elected as one unit. Hence, the only way the deputy can be removed is by him stepping down or through an impeachment. Some opposition members of parliament made attempts recently to bring impeachment motion against Deputy President Ruto, but it did not go far. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
A spokesperson for Lesotho's health ministry says the government is concerned about ongoing health workers' strike. Nurses at Queen Mamohato Memorial Hospital, also known as Sepong, have been on strike for 2 weeks because they say they are being paid less than their counterparts at government-owned health institutions in violation of the so-called public-private partnership agreement. Mponsa Pamaletuela is director of human resources at the Lesotho Ministry of Health.
The government of Lesotho is deeply concerned about the ongoing strike at Queen Mamohato Memorial Hospital because the strike defeats the purpose of Queen Mamohato Memorial Hospital's existence, which is intended to deliver the health services to Basotho and the health services at a tertiary level.
The workers also say or claim that employees at Sepong are treating COVID-19 patients, work that they say other government clinics are not able to do, but yet they are paid less.
As far as Sepong has or is paying the workers, the amount of salaries lower than that of the government employees, yes, it is violating the agreement. So the agreement is not violated by the government of Lesotho because the government of Lesotho is not paying the salaries of the Tsepong staff. Remember, these are the Tsepong or Queen Mamohato Memorial Hospital employees. They are not the government of Lesotho employees. But Queen Mamohato Memorial Hospital or Tsepong, as the operator of that hospital, is obliged, as per the agreement, not to make the workers worse off compared to the workers in the government sector. So as far as Tsepong pays them lower than what the government offers to its employees, then it is violating the PPP agreement.
Do you think this is a dispute that should be handled by Lesotho's labor court?
Let me say to you, James, you know, any labor dispute, if not resolved internally between the employees and the employer, it could always be referred to the Directorate of Dispute Resolution, which is the DDPR. It could always be referred there. So from there, all the necessary steps until it reaches to the labor court could be taken. So if the employees are having a desire to do that, they have the opportunity or they have the chances to push up to the level of the labor court. In fact, this is a dispute between the Tsepong Pty Ltd and its employees. The government is only coming into the picture, intervening or trying to intervene because it is its concern that the services are rendered at Tsepong.
Mponsa Pamaletuela is Director of Human Resources at the Lesotho Ministry of Health. She was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Africa's oldest and second longest serving leader, Cameroonian President Paul Biya, celebrated his 88th birthday February 13. Ceremonies were organized in Cameroon's major towns with loyal government ministers and young people pledging their support, while those opposed to his 50-year rule demanded that the octogenarian hand over power. As Moki Edwin Kizika reports from Yaounde, Biya is blamed by some for the several crises his country is facing. But his supporters say he is a God-sent leader.
Thousands of youths at the Yaounde Multipurpose Sports Complex sing an anniversary song wishing 88-year-old Cameroonian President Paul Biya long life and good health. The young people said they were invited for the anniversary celebration
by Cameroon's government. Among them is 28-year-old Fatimatu Iyawa, president of the Cameroon National Youth Council. She says BIA works tirelessly to improve Cameroon.
We are here to wish him a happy birthday because it is not everybody who is lucky to have his age. He's our patriarch. He's an example. He's a role model for the Cameroonian young people. We have modern sports infrastructures that he put at the disposal of the Cameroonian young people. There are schools, universities with modern equipment that he put at the disposal of the Cameroonian young people.
24-year-old Ernestine Makoke, another member of the Youth Council, says she does not see any reason to celebrate BIA's 88th birthday. She says it is unhealthy for a man at an advanced age to hang on to power.
It's been too long in power since 1982. We've had just one president. Look at a country like America. From 1982 to 2021, they've had seven presidents. In my country, for the sake of democracy, governance, accountability, peace and nation building, I would have preferred that at least we have a second president, at least for a change.
Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with mixed martial arts, where undisputed welterweight champion Nigerian-American Kamaru Usman cemented his position at the top of the 170-pound division by beating top contender Gilbert Burns at the UFC 258 in Las Vegas. Kamaru Usman, who is popularly known as the Nigerian Nightmare, stopped Gilbert Burns with punches 34 seconds into the third round, taking his record to 18-1, defending his title for the third time and breaking judges St. Pierre's consecutive welterweight victories record in the process. The two rivals were formerly teammates at Florida Gym Sanford. After the results was announced, the pair shared an embrace in the middle of the octagon, with Burns in tears and Usman appearing to fight off emotions of his own.
Every day we work, and my coach says it to me all the time, be present in there, you know, and I tried to be present in there today. This one was very, very hard for me today, but, you know, I just tried to stay present, and the results and all the accolades are just going to pile up over time.
Usman now owns the longest winning streak in UFC welterweight history with a victory over Burns on Saturday. And on to athletics, where Kenyan long-distance runner, who specializes in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, Beatrice Chepkoech, now owns two world records. On Sunday, the Kenyan distance runner, who set the world record in the steeplechase in 2018, broke the women's world record in the 5,000 at the Monaco Run by completing the road race in 14 minutes, 43 seconds. Pending ratification, the victory improves on the previous 14 minutes, 48 seconds record set by Caroline Kipkuri in a mixed gender race, and a women's only record of 14 minutes, 44 seconds set by Sifan Hassan in 2019.
I'm so happy because I didn't expect. I was just doing it. It was so good, even though there was a lot of wind. I tried it a lot to follow my pacemaker, and then everything was so perfect.
In the men's category, Ugandan's Joshua Cheptegei, the 10,000 meters world champion on the track, won the men's race in 13 minutes, 14 seconds. He set the men's 5,000 kilometer record of 12 minutes, 51 seconds in Monaco last year.
It was still a good race, but the wind was incredibly difficult to break. I just knew that I have to, you know, run the best way I used to always run. And I didn't want something to distract me, especially with the gloves. And, you know, something small can distract your motivation and your mindset. So I just wanted to just run and defend the title.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice day. And that's it for this Monday, February 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Bate in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.